was contacted by Rod last week, and he asked me to set something up here. I'm glad. I'm sure you guys are all glad that he decided to and was able to make it here to Atlantic in advance of the June 8th primaries. It's a very important election, and I'm glad that Rod is here to explain to us why he is the Republican candidate for governor. Please join me in welcoming Rod.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you to everyone coming out this afternoon. Good to be in Atlantic and Cass County on what we're describing as our whistle stop tour phase of the campaign as we get ready for Tuesday's election. And I certainly appreciate all of you coming out, and Dave was very good to get word out. We stopped at the radio station on the way in. Jim did a 15-minute radio interview with me that will play Monday morning, 7:45. So listen in, and anyone that you know, say, hey, tune in on Monday morning and listen to that interview that Jim did with Rod. And so would certainly like to say thank you to the press that is also here. Trish is with me. I think most of you have had a chance to meet Trish, and I am very unapologetic when I make this statement, but Trish will make one outstanding first lady here in Iowa. And we've enjoyed this campaign together, and I've been at this almost a year, and Trish has been very, very supportive of me in this campaign. And now in the last month, she's been able to travel quite a bit with me across the state. And not only have I appreciated that, but the many Iowans we've had the good fortune to meet have appreciated getting to know who Trish is. Because whether you like it or not, people are just as interested in who are you as a couple, as a family, and that's a quality that, you know, Iowans still value. Who are you? Where are you from? What are your people like? And I've often said as I open formal remarks that we live in a state where we still emboss the county of residence on license plates, because it matters to us where people are from. And so that's an important part of the message that you share. And I think most of you might know that I currently serve as a state representative from Carroll. So we don't live too far from where we are right now. And I know that serving 10 years in the Iowa House of Representatives, serving the people of Carroll County, Eastern Crawford County, and Southern Sac County gives me a perspective that I can go to Des Moines, serve the people of Iowa as governor, but in particular, since we're in Atlantic, we're in Cass County, I will remember Western Iowa. Because if you're like me, I wonder at times, do they remember there is an Iowa west of Interstate 35, or in our case, west of Highway 71?
Yeah.
And I will. And you would see me back here, not only after I win the nomination next Tuesday, but as your governor, you would see me back in Southwest Iowa, and I won't forget Southwest Iowa, and that's important. We'll make room here, and if there is a moment where you need to step up and perhaps leave, I'll understand that. That'll be fine. Most people like a little bit of personal background, and so let me give that to you. I was born in Waverly in 1957. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm 52 years old. And my dad graduated from Upper Iowa University at Fayette, became a high school government history teacher, and taught many, many years in what is now called the Colonesco School District, which is in Story County. Mom and dad still live in the hometown of Zering. And so I'm the oldest of five kids. When I graduated from high school, I went to Iowa Christian College, a private college in Des Moines, and one of the best things ever to happen to me was I met Trish. And Trish is from North Central Iowa. Her folks still live on the family Century Farm in Wright County. And they not only are actively involved in farming, they also own and operate a farm implement dealership. And so we stay very closely connected to agriculture and agribusiness through Trish's family. In 1985, we moved to Carroll, and that's been our home for 25 years. And it's the hometown to our two grown children. Our oldest is our daughter, Lindsay. She and her husband, Shane, and their four children live at Malvern, just on down the road in Mills County. And Lindsay is a high school teacher and coach, and Shane is involved in agriculture and agribusiness down in that area of Southwest Iowa. And we're very fortunate that we live about 100 miles from them and our grandchildren, so we're able to get together and see them quite often. And our son Brett just graduated a few weeks ago from the law school at the University of Iowa. And so Brett will be off and running in his career of choice. And as I've often quipped, and Dave, you'll appreciate this, in this day and age, every family needs a lawyer. Now we've got one. So we're proud that Brett graduated from law school. For 20 years, I've served in a statewide development position with the Christian Churches, Churches of Christ, where I've been involved in leading efforts to establish new churches, but also lead in leadership development initiatives, strategic planning with local congregations. And some of you would be familiar with First Church of Christ here in Atlantic. Some of you, perhaps, I know some of you are members of the church here. But that work over 20 years has given me the opportunity to stay very current and up to date on what effective leadership is all about. And the life lessons I've learned about effective leadership have also served me well as a state representative. And as I said, in 2000, folks back home elected me to my first term in the Iowa House. And in these 10 years, my colleagues, the Republican colleagues in the Iowa House, have elected me to a leadership position. So I have served in a formal leadership role 8 of these 10 years and have had, you know, a real honor in serving one's peer group of leaders as one of their elected leaders. I have the distinction, 44 Republicans in my caucus, of coming from the least friendly Republican district in the caucus based on voter registration, which we were talking about earlier. In Carroll County, the anchor of my district, the vast majority of registered voters are independents, which is true just about everywhere anymore. But there are a lot more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. But they have elected this conservative Republican over and again, 5 terms altogether, to be their state representative. And a couple years ago, people began talking to me seriously about looking at the 2010 gubernatorial race, saying, Rod, the Republican that we need to look for in 2010 needs to be a conservative Republican who has experience and will be able to not only unite and lead Republicans as their nominee, but be someone who can go into the general election campaign with Chet Culver, cast a compelling conservative message for the future of Iowa, and attract thousands of independent registered voters and at least conservative Democrats in sufficient numbers to build the wave to defeat Chet Culver in November of 2010. Chet Culver is a vulnerable incumbent governor, but it will not be easy to beat him. And in order to defeat Chet Culver, our nominee has to be a unity candidate among Republicans. But then we also need to understand that in the general election, we've got to go after the independents and at least conservative Democrats to take away from Chet Culver's base. That's the way we beat him. And the people of Iowa deserve far better than what they've received from Chet Culver in his 4 years as governor. 2010 is a change election year. This change, though, is unlike the change promised by our current president 2 years ago, because this change is coming from the grassroots up. The people are bringing the change in 2010, and that bodes well for the future of Iowa, and I believe ultimately for our country, because the people have been awakened, and they are aware of what's been going on, and I have never seen the kind of unrest, discontent, frustration, and anger toward government that I now see. And again, I'm 52 years old. I've never seen the electorate as awakened and aware and intending to do something as they are in 2010, and it's a good thing. The people are going to reassert themselves as the real political power in government, just as the founders designed it. You know what the first 3 words are to the Constitution of the United States? We the people. Before you understand what's in that document, the premise is laid out. It's about the people. Our state constitution, in Article 1, Section 2, simply but very powerfully, it says, all political power is inherent within the people. And before you understand anything else that's written in our state constitution, you begin with the premise that all political power is inherent not in the legislature, not in the executive branch, not in the judiciary. It's very clear. Political power is inherent in the people themselves. And the people have become awakened to that. And so 2010 is not about the political parties. It's not about politicians. It's not about political interest groups. 2010 is about the people reasserting themselves as the real political power in government. That's why I believe 2010 will be a significant, and I believe a watershed election year that will have consequences for a long time to come. For our young people, it's for them as much as anything. That change needs to happen, but it's going to be the right change, and change brought by the people themselves. I'm a conservative. I believe in limited government, personal responsibility. As you can already tell, I believe the founders meant exactly what they wrote when they penned those words to the Constitution of the United States. I believe that life in the womb is that of an unborn child, and that life has worth, value, and dignity, and that human life should be protected. I believe in the traditional definition of marriage. Marriage is a covenant relationship between one man and one woman. Always has been, is, always will be. Not only because the statute here in Iowa says so, not only because natural law teaches that's the way the creation works, but also because God's law says one man, one woman. And here in Iowa, the people of this state deserve the opportunity, and entitled to the opportunity, to settle the question of what our legal definition of marriage is. And the people should be allowed to vote on a proposed amendment to the state constitution. And as governor, I will work hard to make sure that in my first year in office, your elected representatives and senators take up that resolution. Because what's been happening since April 3rd of 2009 on the part of those in office, whether it's Governor Culver, or the Speaker of the Iowa House, Representative Pat Murphy, or the Majority Leader of the Iowa Senate, Mike Gronstahl, is disrespectful, because it's clear the people want to see that matter brought to a vote. And the right thing to do by leadership is let the resolution come to the floor of the Iowa House and the floor of the Iowa Senate. Take it up. Can't tell an individual legislator how to vote, but we should be taking this up for a vote, because it's about respecting the people and the process. And the Constitution says clearly, the branches of government disagree over a subject as important as marriage, take it to a vote of the people and let them settle it by deciding whether or not to amend their Constitution. That's the right thing to do. Now, I believe 2010 will be a very good year for Republicans. I believe that here in Iowa, the people are ready to change out Chet Culver for a Republican, and obviously I'm here applying for the job. I think I'm the candidate to take him on and defeat him. But I also believe Republicans are well positioned to take control once again of the Iowa House, and if this wave is large enough, perhaps even the Iowa Senate. But at the very least, the margin in the Iowa Senate will be greatly narrowed between Democrats and Republicans. If it's a really good year and a large enough wave, Republicans could well control both chambers. And with a Republican governor and Republicans in control of the Iowa House and hopefully the Iowa Senate, that marriage resolution, I believe, will be taken up on day one. As governor, first order of business, because I believe we'll take care of that resolution on marriage. We then hit the ground running. Republicans and I will be on the same page when it comes to putting our fiscal house in order. What's happened with the state's budget is shameful. You cannot spend money at 18, 19, 20% for 2 and 3 years and think that there is any way you avoid the day of reckoning with the state's budget. You cannot sustain spending like that, and now we're told that next year the budget gap looms as large as $750 million to $1 billion. That is a deep, deep hole. And in Iowa, people are careful with their money, and they expect that people in positions of leadership and decision making in state government should be careful with the taxpayers' money. And as governor, I will practice the same kind of stewardship on behalf of the taxpayers that I have as a legislator. Because I grew up in a home where my parents taught me money doesn't grow on trees. And they taught me how to manage money. And I've lived like that. And I've served as a legislator. And I will use good judgment, wisdom about how to spend the taxpayers' money. And so we're going to adhere to that 99% spending limitation law. And we're going to go to work and we'll find areas in the budget where we can reduce spending. And there are places where we can cut spending. And over 2 to 3 years, we will get this budget back in alignment like it should be. You cannot spend money that you do not have. And the last thing you do is raise taxes on Iowans as a way of fixing the problem that the people didn't create. But those in positions of leadership, particularly Chet Culver, who is the last person to sign off on the budget, he's responsible for this. And so we have to go to work in getting our fiscal house put back in order, and we got to respect the taxpayers, and I will do that. We will adhere to that 99% spending limitation law. We'll go to work and find areas of the budget where we can reduce spending. And Iowans have made it very clear to me as I have traveled, just focus on the first things first. And don't get creative with our money. Remember, it's about public safety. So make sure law enforcement is adequately funded, that corrections is adequately funded. Remember that citizens expect access to justice. So you provide adequate funding to the court so people have that opportunity. And you provide for the things that commerce requires. You invest in infrastructure, roads and bridges. That's a function of government. And then it's very clear wherever I've gone, Iowans still highly value local schools, so they make it very clear, you make sure that you provide resources for our local schools, and they are not happy with what Chet Culver did last October in that across-the-board 10% budget cut. In October, when schools were in session, local governments had their budget set, when the governor ordered that across-the-board cut, it really created havoc for everybody. That is the poorest way to manage a serious budget challenge like we had last year. The governor can only manage the budget and do it with an across-the-board adjustment. A 1% or a 2%, as difficult as that might be, the governor can do that and manage a budget. But when you reduce by 10%, a state budget that is already in place and functioning, you will create unintended consequences that even to this day, people are telling me about. What the governor should have done when we knew we had a budget problem at the beginning of 2009, he should have gotten serious about starting to reduce spending. And Republicans in the legislature in 2009 said, we've got to slow down spending. We're going to have to cut spending. Or we're going to have a real deep problem next year. What were we told all through session? We don't have a problem. Everything will be fine. After session was over, summer of 2009, the problem wasn't getting better. It was getting worse. I called for the governor to call for a special session of the legislature to go in and begin making adjustments in our budget. Again, denial. We don't have a problem. Everything will work out. And then in October, the Revenue Estimating Conference came out with its revised forecast, reduced revenue by over $200 million. Next day, Governor Culver announces, this is the worst economic time since the Great Depression. I'm going to have to do something significant here. And it's like, where have you been? We all saw this a long time ago and called for action, and you did nothing. And now you tell us it's the worst economic time since the Great Depression. That is not good stewardship of the taxpayers' money, and that is not good management of a state budget. As governor, we have to proactively address the spending problem, and I will work with the legislature, and we will get this financial house back in order, and we will prioritize the areas that Iowans have made it very clear to me are the key services that we look for you to provide, schools, local schools are one of them. And then don't worry about getting creative with new programs. And then we address the economy here in Iowa. The economy here in Iowa is still languishing. We're not seeing the kind of turnaround that we'd all hope and like to see happen. And I'm concerned that if we don't understand what it takes to really see the private sector turn around here in Iowa, that we're not going to see any recovery anytime soon, especially one that includes job creation. Governor Culver's idea of stimulating the economy by borrowing $870 million, bonding for it, so that now we're on the hook here in Iowa for $1.66 billion to be paid back over the next 20 years, that was a flawed concept and the wrong approach to what is necessary to stimulate an economy. The right things are about respecting the private sector and the way this economic system was designed to work, and it's unique here in America. When there is a recession, the best thing that government can do is step back and say, it's less government, not more government. We don't borrow our way into economic recovery. What we need to do is, first of all, respect and support business. And in Iowa, we do that by not only maintaining our right to work law, but as governor, I will market Iowa as a right to work state, because I'm convinced that only right to work states will see their economies grow and prosper in the future. And then we cut taxes for business. You want to stimulate the private sector? You want to see business rebound? You want to see the economy recover? Then you cut taxes for business. And I've asked business leaders in my travels across Iowa, would it make a difference in your company if we eliminated the corporate income tax? And they've all said, yes, it would, because we'd keep that capital in-house, reinvest it within our business, and it would provide us the opportunity to expand facilities, add new product line, we'd purchase new equipment. Ultimately, it would help our business, and we would create jobs out of this. We'd hire people back who have been laid off, or we'd hire new people. With all this borrowed money that's out there working in the economy, what's happened with our unemployment rate in Iowa? It's been going up. 117,000 Iowans out of work. That's a big number. And I'm concerned about those individuals and their families. Where are they going to find work to provide for themselves? Government's not going to provide it. It's business that is the engine that drives our economy. So government needs to be supportive. We do it through friendly tax policy and a friendly regulatory climate here in Iowa. And I've heard an earful from business people where they ask the question, why is it that in state government there are departments that view their role as waiting to drop bags of hammers on business all the time? What is it that they don't understand about our economy and the important role that businesses play in the economy, and how ultimately it's business that generates the revenue that makes it possible for state government to even have resources to do anything with? And I have heard an earful, and it's very clear to me there needs to be an attitude change within the executive branch in departments and agencies, especially those that deal directly with business, so that it becomes understood that we are to be supportive and helpful to business, not adversarial. That's what's come through. It's an adversarial relationship, and it shouldn't be like this. And I think they're right. And I think we need to address that issue. And we need to turn the image around so that Iowa is seen as being business friendly, not business hostile or adversarial. Because as governor, it'll be a priority of mine to support our existing businesses here in Iowa, but we also ought to market Iowa and aggressively go out and find businesses that are looking for a place to establish themselves. We ought to go out and attract them. Come to Iowa. We're going to be supportive of you. We're going to back up our words by marketing ourselves as a right-to-work state, cutting taxes, and alleviating the regulatory burden placed on business. That's what we ought to be doing. That's what I'll do as governor. It's about getting our financial house in order. It's about emphasizing what works within our economic system. It's less government and being supportive of business. The other thing I'm going to leave you with, I want to go back to this idea of it's really the year of the people. Iowans are looking for individuals who understand that some of the frustration and the anger toward government is more than just being mad at someone and wanting to change out a person for a new person. People are looking for candidates who understand it's about a different attitude toward leadership itself. People have come to the point where they're not happy with the parties, they're not happy with the political system, and they don't like the way that at times it's almost like people in office serve their own personal interests or serve the party over the people. They want a different kind of leadership. And I agree with them. As governor, I will understand that my job and my role is to advance what is in the best interest of the people of Iowa, and I will bring good people in around me as part of my leadership team. The people I appoint to positions of leadership in departments and agencies will think like I do, that it's about the people and serving them well and advancing what's in their best interest. And when our time is up, we will be done. We will move out of the way, and the next individual and the next leadership team will get their opportunity to serve, because the founders never intended for elected office to be a career path. It was an opportunity for citizens to step up and to serve fellow citizens. And when your time is done, get out of the way and go back to the life you live like the rest of us do. I still believe that's the right model for government and the right kind of leadership in elected office. So that's my commitment. If given the opportunity to serve the people of Iowa as their next governor, I'll do the very best that I can with the talents and abilities that God has given me, and I will bring good people around me who share those core values about serving people. And when our time is done, I will hope that we have left things in a better condition than when we started. And when our time's done, we'll move on and get out of the way for the next people who will be given the opportunity to serve the people of this great state. That's what I think is important. It would be an honor to be your next governor. Tuesday is the election. I believe, based on what I have observed and experienced for almost a year now, this primary election is wide open. Wide open. Now, there are polls that are kind of all over the place. In fact, there's an online poll right now that you can look at that shows the former governor, what was the number, 41%, I was 37%, Bob Vanderplaats 22%. I believe that's the Des Moines Register's website poll. This last week, another poll had come out that showed that all three Republican candidates can beat Chet Culver in November. I've said that all along, I can beat Chet Culver. I can beat him in November. I can't get there without your help. I need your help Tuesday. So I would respectfully ask for your vote, and I could almost measure in hours how many hours are left before the polls close on Tuesday. Anyone you can talk to, anyone else you can share my message with, I would appreciate you talking to those folks. Say, you know what, I've met Rod Roberts, I've heard him speak, I know what he stands for, what he believes in, I think he'd make a great governor, would you vote for him too? And if you can influence 10, 20, 30 other people between now and Tuesday, I'd appreciate that, because it's all about turnout. One of the reasons why I think this is a wide open primary election, besides the fact that a lot of people are going to be involved this year. Nobody knows exactly how many are coming and where they're coming from, but the other great variable is with the significant election law change here in Iowa, where we now have same-day voter registration. Who knows how many independent registered voters, and yes, even Democrats, will decide to register as Republicans and cast their vote in the Republican primary election. And until the polls close Tuesday night, no one's going to know for sure, but that's enough of a question mark to create a variability in the outcome where anything is possible. Anything is possible. In 2002, over in the neighboring state of South Dakota, they had a three-person Republican primary race for governor. At that time, it was the lieutenant governor, the state attorney general, and a little-known state legislator by the name of Mike Rounds. Mike Rounds never had the name ID or the campaign money like the two other gentlemen did. But those two other gentlemen started doing this with each other. How many of you have seen the televised debates? Anybody see the last one sponsored by the Des Moines Register held several weeks ago and observe as well as listen to what happened there? I have had more feedback from all over Iowa out of that debate. It was obvious a lot of people were listening. Kay, a lot of people were watching. Kay was one of the people there asking the questions. And they were not only listening, they were observing. And the feedback has been, Rod, thank you for being who you are, for being able to answer a question directly, and staying above the fray, and staying out of that bickering between the other two. That started to happen in South Dakota. And so at the very end, just before the election, things began to move. And after that primary election in South Dakota in 2002, who surprised everybody? Mike Rounds did. He won the primary. He won the nomination, went on to win the election, and he has served as governor of the state of South Dakota. Anything is possible in a primary election. Numbers move dramatically. Polling ahead of the election, I don't know what to make of any of it, because the only poll that will really matter is what happens next Tuesday. And the only endorsement that really, really is most important to a candidate running right now is what the people themselves say in that election. So thank you for coming out. I appreciate you being here, and I certainly will appreciate your vote on election day. Thank you.